This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
I did just get like three text messages from a bunch of friends because they were like, hey, I didn't know you were playing the Hollywood Bowl. And it's because there's a band called Two Cellos and they're playing the Hollywood Bowl this week.
Oh my God, that must suck.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. That happens to me a lot because I also have a cousin who has the same regular name as me, which is John Piricello. And he's an actor. And he was like in Twin Peaks and he was in Godzilla vs. Kong.
Who is he in Twin Peaks?
He plays Chad in Twin Peaks The Return. The like asshole cop from Twin Peaks.
I can't.
Does he? Is he the one who gets killed by Richard or whatever?
Whoa, spoilers! I don't know.
I'm sorry.
I'm just kidding.
I mean, I don't think many people. You can't spoil a David Lynch thing.
I've spoken to you about both of these properties, and the fact that I'm just hearing about this on episode fucking 15 of the podcast is foreign to me. But whatever.
It was funny though the day because they released the Twin Peaks Return cast list like all on the same day, and I got
I remember that.
Yeah, I got a million text messages being like, are you in Twin Peaks? Like, I wish I was in Twin Peaks, man. I love Twin Peaks.
You know that show that aired on Starz called Power? It was like produced by 50 Cent and shit like that.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a character on there named Tariq, and he's like a piece of shit. And so like when the show would air, I would just wake up and like scroll on Twitter and just be like, good morning to everybody but Tariq. It's like, well, what the fuck did I do? Why am I catching Tariq smoke?
That's so funny. Oh, man.
Oh, God. Billy's just always the stupid character. So it's like, you know, whatever.
Are there any particular Billys that you're just like, God, I really wish that Billy didn't share a name with me?
No, not really. It's such a broad, you know, it's like a Bob kind of thing. I just have to share it with everyone. And
it's how I feel about John. It's honestly why I think I'm going to start going by Johnny more. And it's like, I know to like a lot of like Tariq, when I told Tariq that most people call me John, he was like, that doesn't make sense to me.
He's like, I can't. Yeah. I used to think Billy was childish, but now that I'm like over 25, I'm like, no, I kind of like, I got to have that little young glare.
I'm in the same boat. I'm like, man, there's too many Johns out there. When I turn my head, when someone says John and it's almost never for me, I should probably just start going by a new name. So I'm going to maybe go by Johnny. I'm going to start Johnny in real life.
Yeah.
See how it goes. It's going to be weird for all my friends who know me as John, though.
Yeah, I hate it when people call me Billiam in real life. So it's like,
right.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't even like it on the internet. It's like,
it is a good channel name though, man.
It's very broad though. Like you look it up and a lot of things pop up. SEO.
Well, when you search Johnny Two Cellos, you get me and a bunch of cello music. So, you know, I could have thought a little more carefully about it, I guess. Well, that's a good cold open, right, guys?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All
right. Cool.
Let's do the theme song.
Little name.
Oh, I love the theme song.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. When you guys started this, I listened to it like 12 times.
Well, you heard it here first. The theme song's great.
I've been watching them for years. It's always been something that fit with all the animated characters that's doing their own bits. With a fry who's in the future and a family guy that sucks. With a father from a hill, a burger family runs amok. The show and spies is the same guy, except he totally say f***. And a verse.
Let's watch cartoons that burn.
What the f*** is up, everybody? Welcome to Cartoons That Curse, the podcast where we talk about cartoons that say swear words. I'm here with my co-host, Tariq. You may know him as Toonrific Tariq. Tariq, how are you?
Yes, I am here, and I'm doing all right.
And you're in a new place today. You've got a different background.
Yeah. I moved into the living room just because there's like a lot of shit in my room, and I didn't feel like moving around.
Well, it's a nice change. It's a nice change. And we got a real special guest today, Billy, a.k.a. Billiam on YouTube.
Hello.
Welcome.
I'm sorry,
dude.
I didn't interrupt you. I was trying to.
It's okay.
Get it back no, in there for a second.
We interrupt each other a lot on this podcast. It's part of the thing.
Yeah, we do actually.
You're fitting in. You're fitting in.
Okay,
already.
good.
Dude, thanks for coming on the show. We're really excited to have you. I know you're.
Yeah, of course.
I know you're a Futurama fan, though you haven't really talked about it much on your channel. I know.
No,
but.
I haven't. It's one of Simpsons and Futurama, two of my favorite things of all time, and. I don't know. I guess I've done very broad type videos over like overviews of series before. And it's not until kind of recently that I haven't even released anything on my channel like this, but have wanted to do more focused stuff. And I right. feel like for long series like this, it is more interesting to, you know, go into the nitty gritty and look at certain corners of it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing the last year or so. And it's like, it's fun and rewarding. I definitely recommend it. And I'm sure a lot of your audience would love to hear you talk about Futurama and The Simpsons, two things that lots of people love.
Right. Yeah, just a lot of people said a lot of stuff about it. So it's just trying to figure out what can I say that's new, you know?
It's always worth finding stuff to talk about, though. I think people, regardless of what you have to say, will want to hear what you have to say. So,
that's true. That's true. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you.
Well, tell me, when did you start watching Futurama? You have like a history with Futurama?
Yeah, I have like a couple have handful of memories of being on like summer vacation, and watching it on Adult Swim, like when I wasn't supposed to.
Right.
And my parents were kind of warming up to me liking The Simpsons because it was on right after like Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! On WB. The Simpsons would follow right after, and they didn't love it, but they kind of, you know, opened up to it. And I remember being in like hotel rooms or somewhere else, and I remember watching, I think the very first episode I ever saw was the episode where Fry goes back to his bank and finds out his like 3 cents has blown up to be worth $4 billion.
Right. A fish full of dollars. Yeah. That's a good app.
And I remember vividly remembering that it wasn't a kid's show as soon as mom steps out of her big dress and starts swearing at like all of her kids and all that. And I started watching it more on Adult Swim over the years, and eventually got all the DVDs and started binging it. And that was like right before Bender's big score was announced. And, you know, I remember the lead up to all of these movies and being, I remember I learned about it because of the Simpsons movie DVD. There's a trailer for Bender's big score.
Really?
And And I put it in, and I was so shocked because I remember just being so shocked about the Simpsons movie.
Right.
Like getting
maybe that's how I found out. Cause last time we did this, months ago, I was trying to figure out how did I even know that this was going to happen. Maybe that's how I knew.
My jaw dropped because I had just gotten into it and I knew it was over.
Dude, and I'm jealous of that because I actually remember watching the pilot when it aired, which is crazy. But I didn't get into it until I didn't get really into Futurama until after it aired on Adult Swim. And by then it was like, by the time I realized I loved Futurama, it was canceled. And I was like, there was like a few years where I was like, I can't believe there's no new Futurama. I bought the Futurama game so that I could watch the cutscenes and be like, this is the only Futurama I have left to watch.
Was this the DVD that has the cutscenes on it?
This was the DVD that has the cutscenes on it. Beast Willie Beaming Backs. They actually changed it a bit. I was actually talking on a voice chat with Tariq about this yesterday. They cut out a lot of the video game centric jokes from the DVD version of it, and they added in like extra sound effects to make it like feel a little more like a real episode, even though it still just feels like cutscenes from a video game. But if you watch the cutscenes that are actually ripped from the game instead, there are extra jokes in there that you don't catch during the Lost Adventure, and they're all video game centric jokes. But yes, that I spent so much time beating that very difficult game and just so that I could watch those cutscenes. And then like, you know, a couple years later, they dropped them all on that DVD. And I was like, well, was it time well spent? I don't know. But when, I can't even describe how excited I was when they announced like Bender's big score was coming and the four DVD movies were coming. It felt like a dream come true because I had just been for years being like, I just wish there was more Futurama. Yeah. And yeah, and I guess that's what we're here to talk about. We already talked about Bender's Big Score, but we talked about it months ago because we couldn't stop ourselves from wanting to talk about Bender's Big Score after we finished the original four seasons, but we just released the episode last week, week. So that episode we recorded forever ago. So this is the first Tariq and I have talked about Futurama in months.
I'll let the record be known, man. I watched like half of that Bender's Big Score episode and I don't remember any of that shit. Like, I don't remember having any of those conversations. That shit is like, it's so weird to like see a version of yourself. It's like an era, like it's like a point in, like it's like a black hole in my life. It's like I don't remember that day.
Yeah, like 2 hours. 2 hours. Like,
I just remember that it happened. I don't remember any of that. Like, we were talking about weird, like coke and shit. I don't remember that.
That is kind of funny. Like, it's such a unique thing. Like, imagine just getting sent a video and it's just like a conversation you had with some friends at the bar and you totally forgot about. And you're just like watching yourself have a conversation. You're like, what was they talking about here? That's kind of what it felt like to rewatch it up that episode after doing it months ago and not thinking about it for that long. It was like, huh, what did we talk about? Weird.
Right. I always feel so horrible like getting rid of footage because of that.
Right.
Like raw footage. Because I'm like, do I really all these outtakes of me not getting this line right? Oh god. Yeah. If I start thinking about every memory as something that can be recorded and lost, I'm gonna
Yeah, then do you stop living in the moment? Now this is gonna get real existential. My god.
Let's take photos of fireworks instead of looking at them.
Oh man.
Let's become the fireworks.
Oh, true. Oh, you are a firework. Katy Perry talked about this. Yes.
So these movies came back. I think they're kind of a mixed. I think people are mixed on these movies. I've got a lot of love and nostalgia for the movies, though I am also mixed on them, I would say. We talked about Bender's Big Score, and I still love Bender's Big Score.
Oh, yeah. I adore Bender's Big Score.
It's still,
It's so good.
Yeah, and as a return to the series, it's sort of like that Avengers Endgame nostalgic look at like what came before it, and so it's a real, you know, kind of nice just walk down memory lane, but also it's just, you know,
Endgame, it's good, totally it ripped has off a little Bender's Big Score.
Exactly. I think that's evident. And then I like the, you know, the little Fry and Leela knot it ties.
Me too.
After having waited for a little bit more on that relationship.
Yeah, they tied that knot like 3 or 4 times over the show, and they pretty much did it well. Like they did it well every time, but it did get to a point where you're like, huh, how many times?
In the later seasons, they make jokes about their on again, off again relationship. Which is like, I hate that it became that.
Right. I'm at least happy they acknowledged it rather than just pretending it wasn't the thing. You know. But that'll be interesting to go back and to like, Tariq's. That's going to be fun to go talk about once we get to those seasons because Tariq barely remembers any of that stuff.
I revisited it a few years ago and I just blank slate. I had seen all of them, but I couldn't remember a single one.
For sure. There's a handful that I remember really vividly and then a bunch that I just completely forgot about.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple like that. Like I vividly remember Reincarnation. I vividly remember
that's just a gem. Yeah,
right. So good. Late Philip J. Fry, I vividly remember. Mm-hmm. That might be it, honestly.
Oh, wait, that's the one that's the gem, the late Philip J. Fry, where they're in the time machine. I don't remember which one Reincarnation is.
Oh, Reincarnation is,
I was going to say it's the, actually, well, we can talk.
Animated differently?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, okay, I do remember that one.
Actually, that's a good transition into this movie because this movie's intro has that Steamboat Willie parody, which is really well animated, again.
Yeah.
But they also do that in Reincarnation. So there's actually two sequences they've animated for this show where they do it in that old Disney style. And I love it. I love them bouncing around, you know, like moving their arms up and down. It's fun. It's really fun. So we're all fans of Bender's Big Score. Let's talk about Beast with a Billion Backs, which I think is some people's least favorite movie. Some people it's in the middle. Some, you know, it's kind of, people are mixed on this one. I think there's a lot of varying opinions. How do you feel about Beast with a Billion Backs? Billy, go first.
I think it's very strong comedically.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some of my favorite Futurama jokes in it.
Totally.
But it's, I don't love it. I don't love how it comes together, and I hated it when it came out.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, I was an 11-year-old kid with opinions.
What year was this?
This was 08.
2008 or 7. Yeah. So maybe I was 12.
It was 07. 07 was Bender's Big Score, and then 08, I think both Beast with a Billion Backs and Bender's Game, and then 09, Wild Green Yonder.
Fuck, yeah. So I was 11 too. We were both 11 with opinions.
I feel like I've grown to appreciate more about the movie, though, as I'm no longer
that,
11.
I was in this similar boat where I didn't hate it, because at that point I was incapable of hating Futurama. I just, like, I was so happy for it to be back that I was just like, I'm going to enjoy it while it's here. But I didn't love Beast with a Billion Backs. For a while was my least favorite of the four movies, and it has slowly moved up to, I think, my second favorite of the four movies. So, yeah, it's weird. I don't know. Things change over time. Tariq, how did you feel? This is the first time you've seen it in a long time, right?
Right. Yeah, this was like, it wasn't exactly a fresh watch, because there were points where I'm like, oh, okay, so that's where that joke's from. Well, like, okay, I remember that. But like, I do agree. I agree with Billy. Like, I think it's like, comedically, I think it's really funny. Like, I think I got a couple like big laughs out of it. And like, there's like a lot of really good quotes, but I don't know. Like, I found there was a point in the film where, like, well, first of all, this is, compared to Bender's Big Score, this is just almost not a movie. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels more like the Stewie movie we talked about, where it's like, it's not as clear cut where the episode ends, but it's starting to show that. Like, even in the opening, it doesn't feel as grand. Like, they just kind of like, all right, here's what happened last time, and here's the theme song. Like, and they just kind of hop right in and just kind of, I don't know, it's not like bigger in any way. It doesn't feel gigantic or cinematic. But it
feels like an episode instead of like an A and a B plot. It has an A through an E plot.
Right.
I think just it feels a little bigger. I think the other dimensional stuff, and the fact that like what's happening is happening to the whole universe, makes it feel a little bigger. But it does feel way more segmented than especially Bender's Big Score.
I think the relationship arc with Fry and Colleen needs a few episodes as well. I feel like you couldn't. I was trying to think if this would fit into one episode somehow. And I don't think you could make that work in one episode.
Right. And I think, and that is actually something I enjoyed. I kind of enjoyed how that paralleled the YIVO stuff, even though it feels like there's maybe a bunch in between that feels like they're separated. It's like the first episode is specifically the Fry and Colleen relationship stuff. And then the last episode is the YIVO relationship stuff. And that's supposed to parallel each other, because it's these two, it's Fry coming around on the polyamorous relationship thing. And on a galactic or a universal scale, you know, he's like really coming around, but it feels like there's so much time in between those two things that I'm like, oh, maybe they could have bridged this gap a little more cleanly. But I do appreciate that ambition there. I think that's kind of a creative idea, is to have Fry so uncomfortable with this type of relationship, and then completely embrace it in the last part of the movie. But while we're talking about Colleen, let's just, I think Brittany Murphy's, I think Brittany Murphy's performance is really good in this movie. She's really funny.
Yeah.
And this was her last, other than King of the Hill, her last voiceover performance, which, man, she was such a good voice actress. She's like kind of an underrated voice actress, because she did years of King of the Hill. She was both Luann and Joseph, young Joseph, before his voice changed.
Ah, I forgot about that. Yeah, because I'm so used to like what he became later. But, right. Yeah, that's right.
And
watching King of the Hill with my girlfriend, and we watched the That's My Purse episode out of context.
Yeah.
And so she just, seeing the Joseph change, was like, she just didn't know what was coming. Such a shock to her.
That's so funny.
Johnny, did I ever tell you that story about when I showed my friend King of the Hill? I was showing it to her, and because she never seen it before, so I asked like dubbing them. I was like, "Yo, so what should I show her? Like, what do I show her to make her see that like King of the Hill is actually pretty dope?" And then they told me to show her like the Megalomart stuff, like when it blew up and shit like that. And like,
oh yeah.
Right. So I do that. And then we're at like the funeral. And you know, all the characters are there. So like there's sometimes you got to explain who everyone is. So you can understand like their relationships.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, who's that? She pointed to the Native American. She's like, oh, who's that? I'm like, oh, that's John Redcorn. She said Redcorn? And I was like, oh, shit. I didn't realize how fucking insane his name is.
It's weird because I grew up with that show and I didn't think twice about that either.
Right.
Yeah. There's so many things go over your head. Like right. Revisiting Futurama. Like, I need to revisit it because I'm like, I feel I'm like now everyone's like age in the show.
Right.
Just to see it from a different perspective. Every time I revisit these shows, I see it from a completely different perspective.
We had a really good time revisiting it, but there were like certain episodes and certain jokes where we were just like, oof, that one doesn't hold up.
Yeah, there's some stuff in this one that I feel like is a little, and then there's some stuff in late Futurama even that kind of repeats some of the iffy stuff that this one does.
Yeah, for sure. They were not always squeaky clean with that stuff, but generally better than a lot of shows, I would say. So
yeah.
Absolutely.
When we talked about this on previous episodes, it's rare that it's only occasionally that it feels like there's something problematic with like fundamentally with an episode premise. And most of the time it's just like a joke here and there where you're like, oof, that's rough. We talked a long time about the episode Bend Her. And that was one that we were just like, it's hard to reconcile with this one.
There's the gender swap episode later on too.
That
happen, doesn't it?
It does.
It's
a weird one. We'll talk about it in a while, I guess. But
again, I just everything is going to be so fresh. Like first of all, there are pockets that I just haven't seen.
Right.
But the stuff that I have seen is like going to be really fresh. So.
Yeah. You know, I revisited the whole show last year because I started making a lot more Futurama videos. And like, I should just watch the whole show. And the revival seasons are about what I remembered. Some of them I liked more than I had before. Some of them I liked less than I had before. You know, I'm still glad they happened because there are some episodes in there that I love.
Yeah, there are some really good ones.
Yeah, and I think they ended really strong. I think they ended like with 3 or 4 really, really strong episodes in the last season.
I like those last two.
Yes.
Like the one where Zoidberg with Bender and the little girl and Zoidberg. And,
yes. And then Meanwhile.
And then the next one.
And I had fun with the one Murder on the Planet Express, which was the like... It was basically Among Us. It was like, oh, there's an alien who shapeshifts Among Us.
The John Carpenter movie.
Oh, The Thing?
The Thing,
Yeah.
I knew it was some basic word.
CNI in there somewhere.
And then other people love this one, and I don't love it as much as other people do, but I do think it has one of the sweetest moments in the whole show. And the one right before that is Game of Tones, which is... the one with the like the really nice Fry and his mom moment.
Yeah, the dream one.
Yeah, and I think the episode itself has some issues, but I think that ending is almost incomparably emotional. That's like a really strong, strong emotional moment.
That's one of the ones I found out about through you because I feel like I knew it existed, but not really. So when I was watching your video, I don't even remember which video it was because it was a while ago, but you brought it up and... I was like, oh, it was, you did a video on Fry's family. You did like, you talked about like all of the times we talk about Fry's family. And I remember like seeing you played the moment and like, I was like, oh, this is really, really fucking good. Like, I just like the fact that like, he doesn't say anything, right? Like he just kind of hugs her, just kind of overwhelming emotion.
Yeah.
That's a good moment. He has the opportunity to talk to her again, and all he wants to do is hug her. He's just like, wow, I miss my mom. And that's, oof.
Yeah, I
that's
miss
a good
my
moment.
Mom. It's just a good, like, feeling to sit on.
Totally. That's a really strong ending for an episode that I think has some structural issues.
There's the one with Hermes and Bender as well.
Love that.
Bender realizes he's not immortal.
Yeah.
That's a great one too.
That was in the first season back, and that's seriously like one of my favorites of the revivals. There's like I think there's about 5 to 10 that are like strong episodes, but you know,
yeah,
they made like 40 of them or whatever. So or 50.
I don't mind watching average Futurama.
Right.
I really don't.
Right.
Same. Exactly.
You remember that? Remember that day we were like going through like the episode list, and then like we found out. Well, not we, because you were telling me, but like I found out how many of the ones I didn't like were so close together, and yes. I was like, how the fuck was I watching this shit? Like.
Well, it was because it was the very beginning of the return of the show. Right. It starts with like three pretty rough episodes.
What are they? I just remember they're all like globs and get brought back to life.
That's the rebirth.
That's the first one. Rebirth. I just don't remember what happens.
Rebirth has grown on me a little bit. The first time I watched it, I was kind of like, eh. It's grown on me a little bit, but it does feel it doesn't. I don't know. It just feels like they're cleaning up the mess that they made at the end of Into the Wild Green Yonder. And so it doesn't like work perfectly as an episode for me, but I do think it has some good stuff in it. And then the second one is In a God of Delilah, which is the one where like Leela and Zap are like Adam and Eve on a planet, and it's all Zap manipulating her. That one's pretty.
I kind of remember that.
And then the third one is Attack of the Killer App, which I actively is that where they
compete each other on social media?
Yeah, it's social media. They all get iPhones.
iPhone
idea is pretty clever. Like the idea of the phone being in their eye.
The iPhone.
Where the episode really falls apart is they reveal that like Leela has a singing boyle named Susan. Yeah.
I remember this.
It's the most dated. Unfunny blah like storyline.
And I remember hearing that the Simpsons like season 31 or 32 was like okay, like pretty like good, like surprisingly, and I the first episode description is like Homer and Bart are on social media and are competing against each other, and I'm just like, I can't watch that. Like I'm I watched
I've been here before that. But,
oh my god, that's so funny. I think I watched that and I don't even remember it, man.
There's a few
in the latest season that I enjoyed. I like there's a podcast episode that I enjoyed. It's like a murder mystery podcast.
Lisa and Marge.
Yeah. I thought that was fun. Like that. And then you like Uncut Femmes, right, Tariq? That's your favorite.
That episode fucking rules. I love that one. That episode rocks.
We always end up talking about Simpsons on here. We got to eventually.
It's just so easy.
It's also like when you're talking about adult animated shows, it's impossible not to talk about that one because it just like set the blueprint. It's like it's the reason we're here.
Yeah, and there's just in all of the Matt Groening cartoons, there's so many similar like joke rhythms, like the bluntness.
Totally.
Like when Zoidberg says here, he's like, wasn't I playing for my freedom? And Farnsworth doesn't look at him and he says, no. So like, that's a Matt Groening like show kind of like.
Right, yeah.
For sure. Have you, not to keep going on tangents, but Billy, have you watched Must Disenchantment?
Yeah. And I always end up really getting into it like at the end of the season.
Right.
But like whenever I get back into it, I'm like, do I like this? Like, I can't remember.
I thought it was me.
I'm
like, I don't know if I like
when
this
it
yet.
Ends, when it ends, I'll watch it all and I'll probably really appreciate it. But
I think in the this latest part was the one that really started to win me over. And I think it's partially because I kind of gave up on it being like a comedy powerhouse like I hoped it would be. And more embraced it being a pretty cool fantasy world that has like really intriguing lore happening, you know, and it's still funny and I still love the actors and characters. But this is the season where I really started like grabbing onto like, oh, my God, look at all this stuff they're setting up and look at all these background hints. And like there's all these little pieces that I'm like, all of a sudden I'm starting to like try to put pieces together and form theories.
Yeah, and I feel invested in it.
Me too.
Like
me
I don't
too.
Like when they're separated and stuff.
Right.
And
Yeah. Lucy, Elfo, and Bean all need to be together. All right. We need to get them back together.
I'm excited. Elfo. The name Elfo is such a Matt Groening thing.
It is.
So is Lucy. Lucy just Lucifer. Yeah. You know. Yeah. It's very funny, but I'm excited for when we eventually talk about that on the pod. I guess we'll probably wait till it's finished, which will be in a couple years, but. Tariq, since you have only watched a little bit of it, I think it'll be fun to explore. Yeah.
Because I remember when it first came out, and like, I'm like, yeah, I'm just gonna watch this shit. And I watched like a couple of them. I watched maybe like, I didn't finish the season, but I did watch a good like 4 or 5 maybe. And like, I just, the whole time I was like, I don't not like this, but I'm not sure if I like this yet. Right. And I was like, and I remember not being able to figure it out. And I think I said something about it to one of my friends. And he said, he was like, I feel like it's their best work. And I was like, you've never even fucking seen Futurama. You shouldn't even. Because he does that a lot. That specific friend does that a lot. Because he like refuses to watch Aladdin for some reason. And he's Aladdin like, I'm going to go watch the Will Smith one. I'm like, no. Don't do that.
Oh, man. Yeah, I feel like the first season of Disenchantment won me over with its like final 3 episodes. And it's like it was like I liked it fine. And then the last 3 episodes felt really serialized and started setting up stuff that was like really intriguing and interesting. And all of a sudden I was like, all right, I think I'm on board. Then season 2 started by following that stuff up and very quickly went back into its episodic nature. And I was like, dang it.
That kind of sounds like a beast with a billion backs, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? It really does. Yeah, because so Beast with a Billion Backs, obviously coming off of the cliffhanger at the end of Bender's Big Score,
right?
Which is the universe tears open, which is weird because we talked about this in the Bender's Big Score episode, but this is the only time where they bridge the gap between two of these movies with a story arc. And then between this one and the next one, there's nothing. And between this third and fourth one, there's nothing.
And I think that's fucking dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of think
go
that's
all in or don't. Yeah. And then I guess the end of Into the Green Wild Green Yonder leads into the first episode of of the revival seasons. But it was weird that they chose to do that with this one and not with the rest of them. It's kind of a strange decision.
Yeah. It really is.
And then I think I do appreciate, though, that this movie's, they used the tear in the universe for something very different. And I think I appreciate that it didn't just feel like, here's part 2 of Bender's Big Score. You know what I mean? It was like, here's its own, this is its own thing. Yes, it's the aftermath of that movie, but this tear in the universe caused by the events of it have caused a new problem. It's a different problem. You know what I mean? It's not just like, we have to go back and fix everything we messed up in Bender's Big Score. You know, it's like, oh, here's Yivo and this completely different universe. And I don't know. I guess I appreciate that they went that route.
Yeah, I guess seeing it in isolation, I definitely do.
Right.
I don't feel like there needs to be continuity between this and the last one at this point. But when I did initially see this, that's kind of what I was expecting, was a more direct continuation.
Me too. Yeah. I was kind of expecting the whole season to feel like it was continuing itself, you know, or season, these 4 movies. And you know, part of me does wish we got Futurama in an era where serialization was more widespread, because Futurama was always so good at sprinkling in little pieces of serialization. And I kind of wish we had gotten maybe some kind of serialized story arc in some season, like maybe in one of the final couple seasons. Cause
yeah, there's a storyline laid out in the next movie that I really wish they followed up on.
Yes.
There's a reveal.
Yes. Tariq, I think I told this to Tariq already.
So you know the reveal, what the reveal is, Tariq?
I think you may have forgotten.
At the end of the movie?
I have a feeling
I probably forgot.
But it is a reveal that is absolutely never followed up.
Can I say what it is?
Yeah, if it doesn't mean anything.
One of mom's kids is Farnsworth's like kid, and it's kind of implied that the others are like Wernstrom's, I think.
Right. What they the do fuck? Seem like it.
And I really wanted a follow-up episode where Q-Bert, and I don't know what his other name is, but I wanted an episode with them getting to know each other because he's such, like, he's so short and like temperamentally, not height wise.
Yes.
And he's so dumb. And I feel like, you know, you could have a nice moment with them. Absolutely.
It's another family in that Farnsworth family tree. And you could do something with Q-Bert and what's his name? His name is Ignor.
Yes, Ignis. So,
I might be mixing it up with his fantasy name in Bender's Game. It's Ignis or Ignor. I can't remember which one is the fantasy
I think it's
name.
Ignor. You know what? I'm just gonna look this up. I don't know.
We have the internet at our fingertips. But I totally agree. We'll talk about it. We'll definitely be talking about this for the next episode, Tariq. But
Oh yeah, that fucking sucks. I'm actually kind of glad that y'all told me.
Right.
Because like if I would have fucking saw the movie and then I would have been hyped about that and when I came here and you would have said, oh no, they don't even fucking do anything about it later on, I would have been really mad.
it seems like something that they should have and would have followed up on, especially when you get stuff like, I mean, it feels like the parallel is Leela's parents, which they revealed and then immediately were like, let's do Leela and her parents' stories. And it's like, it feels like a missed opportunity, especially because there are, it literally is never even referenced again. It's not just that they don't do an episode about it. It's like there are episodes where Ignor is there around Farnsworth and they don't even acknowledge that they're related. It's so strange.
I wonder if Comedy Central had some, like, they wanted it to be like super episodic.
Maybe.
Well, like, because there's barely any new characters introduced even.
That's true.
The second half of the, like, there's no barely not, any continuity established.
Not many memorable
besides
ones.
Like the orangutan. The only
yeah,
one
they bring him. They him bring him back. They bring back Gunther, and I guess, you know, there's a couple things like Fry and Leela's relationship stuff. They at least kind of right. sprinkle that stuff in. Yeah,
because we talked about this recently. Where like we talked about how like the stuff from Roswell that ends well is only referenced a few times, but don't they reference it like in a later episode? Isn't that one of the one times
they reference it in the late Philip J. Right?
They reference it. Shoot, when do they reference it a few times? But the time I specifically remember them referencing it is in the late Philip J. Fry. When
is that the one where he says I did do the nasty and the pasty?
No, that's in the Why of Fry when they reveal that his Delta brainwave missing is because of that, and then. In late Philip J. Fry, it's the forward traveling time machine one. And Farnsworth says something like, it only moves forward in time, so we can't do something disgusting like sleep with your own grandmother. and Fry says, I wouldn't want to do that again. Which is a great joke. It's really funny. But yeah, it does feel like they're just kind of odd references here and there. And there's not like any overt. I mean, there's some like because they. In the new seasons, they have Nibbler just be a member of the crew in certain episodes. Like they don't keep going back and making him wipe their memory or whatever. And so like there's some stuff that kind of follows
changes
up. I don't know.
I honestly
feel like they maybe just forgot that they did the Ignor Farnsworth thing.
Either they forgot or they regretted it. Like they're like, oh, why the fuck did we do that?
No,
never
the thing
mind.
The thing is, it makes a lot of sense. Like
it's hinted at before at some point.
What's that?
I feel like it's hinted at like at another earlier point.
Right. He definitely looks. His head shape is Farnsworth shaped. And it's and then also just the fact that like we know Farnsworth and Mom have had a relationship, you know? So it does feel weird that they like did it and never referenced it again. Even though in the later seasons, there are even episodes that reference like Mom and Farnsworth's prior relationship. So I don't know. It feels like they dropped the ball on that. Could have definitely followed it up. Weird. Oh, well, you know, maybe they'll come back one day and that will be the focus. Which would be weird.
Just that?
The Farnsworth family drama.
Yeah. Yeah. Tariq and I always on this, we talk about how we just want one more movie. Just give us one like theatrical, proper, three-act movie.
To wrap it up.
Yeah. Even though I think they've wrapped it up well four times.
And I feel like they had that Simpsons episode that was supposed to be like the your little swan song.
Which
them.
Tariq and I disagree about. But we'll talk about that when we cover
about
the Simpsons.
That too.
You're not a fan?
I think there was that really short period in Simpsons history where they had that episode where they put them on like the zoo, like on the alien planet. And then they did the Futurama thing, like very close to that. And I think Al Jean said something along the lines of like, yeah, this is just expanding into like sci-fi and stuff. And I'm like, is this like in your plan?
You actually brought up something that I kicked myself for weeks that we didn't talk about, which is that episode you're talking about was supposed to be the sequel to the movie.
Yes,
they
I
just
do
said,
remember
never
that.
Mind.
Yeah. That's so weird.
I always thought good sequel premise would be like people think Mr. Burns dies and then Bart gets all of his money because he was the inheritor. And then Bart runs Springfield. I feel like that was
pretty
like
fun,
very,
actually.
That's fun.
I feel like that's very Simpsons-esque too, like
totally.
From a wide audience standpoint.
Right.
We were talking recently about Simpsons. We got some nice chimes. It's freaking out.
I hope you cut the chimes. It's the fucking ring.
We'll see how it goes. But honestly, I think every time we talk about something interesting, the chimes play. So
every time every time we record, it's usually at night and nobody walks around here at night. But now since we're doing it during the day, everybody's outside.
Oh no. But we were talking a few weeks ago about the Simpsons movie because we covered it a couple weeks ago. We were doing just random movies instead of seasons. And we were like, it sounds like they're allegedly making a second one. And I feel like now that Disney owns it, they'll want to make another one.
Yeah, I feel like they'll fast track it. I mean, I haven't loved all those little shorts they've put out.
First two are fucking awesome. The ones on the theaters.
Yeah.
Especially the first one. The second one is
watched the new ones
good. I can't, especially the fucking the Marvel one.
Yeah, I feel like Marvel has progressed past parody. It's just we've done it. We've cycled through everything. We've made fun of it, and now it just keeps going.
I feel like what they were doing. Okay, I feel like the story they were doing in the Marvel short could have. It feels like. That could have worked as a half-hour story. I feel like they could have just did something really stupid
like
that alien one. Yeah, and did just kind of
Or like the Futurama one, which is just like doesn't make any sense in canon. It's just it feels like a Treehouse of Horror story, not in a Treehouse of Horror.
Or like the Family Guy Star Wars specials.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, they can bring Simpsons in to do promotional specials for whatever you want.
Right. Everything about that Marvel special just kind of seems like they did it really fast, down to the fucking art on Disney Plus. Go to Disney Plus and try to watch that shit. There's a picture of Lisa and she has her hand out and her fucking thumb is on the wrong side and it pisses me off.
Oh my god. It was wonky looking. It's like,
so funny.
It was very wonky looking.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, these were some good tangents, but maybe we should get back to the movie.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But the tangents are half the fun, so no regrets. I think you guys are both right. Comedically, this movie makes me laugh a ton. There's so many funny ideas and jokes in this. Like, we were talking about Brittany Murphy earlier, and I think so much of her delivery makes me laugh. I think she's such a good voice actress. One of the line I always think of is when she's at dinner with all her boyfriends and she goes, "And today I got promoted to chief of police." Just the way she says that and how unexpected that like reveal is really funny to me. I also love when Fry's like telling them how he met Colleen and they do the double flashback.
I adore that.
So funny.
I love their redundancy so much.
Yeah.
Like,
so funny.
Repeating stuff. They do a similar joke later when Bender goes, "All I remember is a blinding light and like a searing ass plane. I better check my black box."
Right.
Blinding light and a searing ass.
Yeah.
So that's what happened.
It's seared. Yeah, that's what happened.
The double flashback is such a funny idea to me because Zoidberg is like, "Oh, I remember it like it was yesterday," and then it's just him talking to Fry on the bench, which I actually recently found out is the exact device they use in Joe Dirt 2, which I don't know if you guys have seen it. I haven't.
No.
But I don't know if you've seen the first Joe Dirt, but the first Joe Dirt is it all takes place around a radio interview, and it's Joe Dirt telling his life story and people like being like, "Wow, what a sad life this guy's had." And then the second one is the guy who did the radio interview being like, "I got one more story about Joe Dirt. I'm going to tell you about it." And then they flash back and it's just Forrest Gump. It's Joe Dirt telling someone his life story on a bench.
What the fuck?
And then they flash back from that. So I don't know if that was just like supposed to be this same joke or if it was just like, what are we doing here? But I found that really funny. I immediately thought about that. I also love, there are some just like specific lines I think are funny. Like Fry saying, will you be moved in with by me? It's a really funny way to word that.
I like when he says that and then she gasps and it's just the fucking line.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah, because they're on the 2D tunnel of love. Right, and just what a like such a simple creative way to make this basic conversation, which is just so like it's not a difficult thing to do when they skew them like that, but like it's so funny.
There were a lot of like little things like that they did that like even though overall I think this story of this movie lacks a little bit, a lot of like just the locations or like little details in the animation are like kind of above and beyond. Like that is such a fun little idea. And it's not even drawn attention to, it's just the location of that conversation. Yeah. Or like, I think about when Bender has the duel later with Calculon and he shoots the giant laser and the laser going through the ocean. And then you just see like that sea monster on a ship and it like how it takes out a bunch of buildings. Like there's so many cool details in the animation and those things that I'm just like, that's really cool. these are just really well thought out sequences. Even though they're like not related to what's happening all that much.
Yeah. It felt like a comedy movie almost in that way.
Right.
Totally. Or like a big screwball rom-com,
yeah,
like thing with everybody having their own little side stories.
Yeah,
there's a lot. Classic.
I do think one thing I noticed about this one is that more gross out humor than most Futurama. I would say not crazy gross out, but like they did like Fry's blood on pancakes. They did,
yeah.
Like is Kif getting killed?
Yeah, that was awesome. Kif with the bouquet bothered me.
I was gonna say the bouquet too.
Yeah,
it's so gross
that he reaches into his belly button and pulls out like the thing that connects SpongeBob and Squidward, like in that one episode.
Oh man, yeah, that was really gross. Yeah, there's a handful of just like and then like when Fry is the Pope. And they're all like, obviously, you got all the tentacle stuff like going into them or whatever. And then when he vomits out Kif to resurrect him, that's pretty gross. And, too.
Like comes into the back of his neck.
Yeah. There's just like, I feel like that's kind of atypical of Futurama to do that much. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's this writer, Eric Kaplan.
I feel like the ultimate reveal, too, is just. Like it's like okay, like
oh yeah, that is kind of
that's a lot. Like
that's like some like Rick and Morty shit.
Yeah, it is. It is just like I was watching the most recent one this morning, and I'm like, so much of this is just like, what's upset you? Like,
right.
Wait, is that the? Are you talking about the fucking?
I can't remember like totally what happened.
What is that one?
It's fresh off my mind. I can't even remember what happened.
I feel the same way about the
sperm one. Is it the sperm one?
No, the one after that.
I didn't see the one after it, but I finally saw that sperm one because I saw that everybody did.
Why can't I remember what happened?
Stuff. It's the parents go out for the night.
Oh, Jerry,
they go on the. Yeah, they do a lot of like we just killed everyone in the room jokes.
Yes,
they like, do that's a lot. The punchline is we just slaughtered everybody in this room.
That feels much more Rick and Morty than Futurama.
Yeah,
Rick and Morty's done that a lot at this point.
Right.
That's actually a good point, though. This almost feels like a Rick and Morty premise, this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
In certain ways. I mean, even like you could even say the Unity episode of Rick and Morty is like feels a little bit like this one. It's different.
Yeah, it's the hive mind kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a different function of this. Like they kind of it's a different execution of the same idea. Like everyone being involved in the same unity.
And the body snatchers. And,
right. You know, right. Exactly. But yeah, there's I think you guys hit the nail on the head though. This is a funny movie. With a storyline that is a little rough at places.
Because I found myself like almost losing track of what was going on at certain points.
Wait till the next one.
Oh shit. But I feel like the film is kind of aware of that. They do something that like really made me laugh because they gave Hermes like my reaction. Like all this stuff is happening with like Fry and his girlfriend and like all the polyamorous stuff, and then the professor just kind of walks in and he goes, right? So I know you guys have all been thinking about the rip in the sky, and Hermes is like, the what? Oh, okay. Because I genuinely forgot. Like, I was like, oh, right. It's something in the fucking sky.
Oh, so funny. I do like the professor. I kind of like that they do a lot with the professor and Wernstrom in this one. Like,
I think it's my favorite plot in the movie.
It's fun to see their like continued rivalry even when they're working together. Like I laugh so hard at the professor being like, call Wernstrom to apologize, and then immediately being like, tell him I'm not here. It's so funny. But yeah, I've always liked their rivalry and their relationship, and this was like you get the most out of it in this more than
and
there,
you
any
get
other.
Their little friendship for a minute.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
When they're throwing the really robots like up against the thing and yeah, just giggling together.
Even though it makes me sad, man, I laugh so hard when they toss
the
koala.
The koala.
The sound design is so fucking funny because it's not a hard thud. It's not like it doesn't hit any fucking cars. It's just. It's so funny.
It's
so good.
Yeah, they fit a lot into this thing though, because you got that, you got the League of Robots, you got the polyamorous stuff. Is a lot.
I forgot about
on.
That League of Robots stuff.
Yeah, I
that
feel
fast.
Like Bender has that line at the end, the great love, all great loves have great jealousy, and I feel like they needed to say that at the beginning just to like tie everything together thematically, because it was like a thesis statement at the end.
Yeah,
it was like, here's what, so you know what we were doing this whole time,
right?
Like, right, we're gonna tell you the theme of the movie.
That's
all
true,
because
it
love
is like
is great jealousy.
You're right, if they had set that up a little sooner, because you've got the whole beginning with the polyamorous relationship is Fry's jealousy. The Yivo thing is all to do with jealousy. And then Bender missing Fry is all jealousy. Yeah. It's so it does feel like it feels like it's a movie where the pieces are all there and they just didn't fit them together the right way. You know, it seems like they could have done a little better structuring all that stuff.
Yeah, a little. Sitting here trying to think if Farnsworth and Wernstrom's like relationship fits into that mold a little bit.
There's a little bit. I mean,
yeah,
I guess they're
I think so.
They're jealous of each other's success whenever they have it.
And don't want to see it with the
Dimondium.
And what is the other one?
Dimondillium.
Dimondillium.
I actually love the DVD for this. Is just the Earth encased in Dimondium or Dimondillium,
which is a very Simpsons movie imagery.
Yeah, true. True. They were working on them at the same time. It's really funny.
Yeah.
It's interesting. And you know, they wrote these movies a little differently than they wrote those shows. I think they got the writers' room together to come up with the story ideas for each movie, and then they just assigned a writer. I mean, every movie has story by X writer and David X Cohen, written by that writer. Except for Bender's Game, I think has a lot of writers on it, if I'm not mistaken, which I think you can tell. Let me see. I think that one has a ton of writers for each different part, which is weird. But this one
their themes for these were all a different major branch of sci-fi. So it's like time travel, giant monster, fantasy, and
eco
maybe,
stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, like, conservation, big social message kind of thing.
Yeah, so like Beast with a Billion Backs was written by Eric Kaplan, story by David X. Cohen and Eric Kaplan. The first and last movie are Ken Keeler, with story by David X. Cohen and Ken Keeler. And then Bender's Game is like part one and two written by Eric Horsted, part three written by Mike Rowe and Eric Kaplan, part four written by David X. Cohen and Patrick Farrone. And you can
that's how the
very
Simpsons
much
movie did it too.
Right, but at least with the Simpsons movie, you're concocting one.
Yeah.
One screenplay, and you can very much tell in Bender's Game, which we'll talk about next week.
I have not seen Bender's Game in so long. Like, I think I skipped over it last time I watched some of these.
It really is the one where it feels like every episode is a completely different episode. There's like some overarching stuff between them all, but I think partially because it seems like maybe they wrote them all in their own little vacuums, knowing the overall story, but being like, all right, we're going to write these parts. You write these parts, you write these parts. And then they smash them together. And it feels completely segmented. Like there's the first episode is them doing a, like a demolition derby, and like by the third episode they're in a fantasy world, you know, in a Lord of the Rings type fantasy world. So it's like, it's,
I remember that sequence that goes on for real long where Fry's like selling the knives.
Oh yeah,
yeah, it goes on for like 2.5 minutes,
selling the knives as like Smeagol from Lord of the Rings
as a salesman.
Yeah, like, it's really
he's
weird.
He's playing a character doing a bit. It's like such a
but I think the character is also voiced by DiMaggio and not Billy West, which is funny.
I can picture the, you
so
know,
weird
the gruff.
Speaking though, back onto Professor and Wernstrom, one of my favorite this always felt a little shoehorned to me until this time. This time I watched it and it made me laugh a lot. And it's when Pazuzu comes back to save them. And it does feel a little shoehorned, but I realized that it was the wish. He's like, I wish we could get out of here. And he just goes, you have one wish left, Professor. Which that is pretty funny to me that he's still got wishes from Pazuzu.
Yeah, I laughed.
Yeah. And then I also like when they're going in on the White House. And they take out the guard, and he's like, "You should have been paying more attention." And then they come and take him out too. Good little visual gag. But
wait, so okay, so how do you guys feel about the Kiff and Amy shit? Because is it ever actually like, do they ever actually talk about it?
I think they do.
Kind of
that they're in this like marriage kind of union, like I think they bring it up again.
The marriage is definitely brought up again. They are like very much married for the rest of the show. They never bring up the Zap thing again, which I think is fine. Like, he was dead.
I mean but he was so fucking mad. Like, he was like, my body wasn't even fucking cold yet.
I will say there is an episode that kind of evens the playing field where, oh no, that doesn't. This is just Amy doing another thing again. It's in the Proposition Infinity episode where they break up and then she starts dating Bender.
She's with Bender. Yeah.
And it just becomes a robosexual marriage thing. Which is also at the time very topical because they called it Proposition Infinity. And at the time there was some proposition that was a gay marriage proposition in some state. And so I think a lot of the early revival stuff feels very topical. You got the iPhone, you got the Proposition Infinity stuff.
It's like a lot of celebrity humor too.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, there's totally a lot of celebrity humor early on Futurama too.
True.
Like, I Lucy think Liu and all that.
A lot of that stuff, it's so funny because watching it when it aired, I was like, this is too topical. And now watching it years removed, I'm like, this feels less topical now. You know
what
I mean?
That their dated future kind of allows topical humor to feel like just a capsule.
If I didn't have a problem with Napstar as a kid, I shouldn't necessarily have a problem with the iPhone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I do have a problem with the iPhone.
I have way more of a problem with the Susan Boyle thing than I do with the idea of the iPhone. Yeah,
I feel like it's just the writers as they age, I think they just lose credibility. Because I remember when you listen to the Simpsons commentaries or Futurama, they talk about how, like, I do this, I'm 35, I'm Homer Simpson, like, I do all this stuff. Uh-huh. Now they're like 60 plus, all the head writers.
You know, that's
to write
interesting.
For a 35-year-old family, you know?
Right.
And you know, 2021.
And that's actually something that's interesting because we've been talking about South Park a bit too. And, like, that's a show where the writers, same writers the whole dang show, and they have transitioned from putting their own stories for the kids and into the adults. So all of a sudden they're just like, well, let's just start telling stories through these characters instead, because we relate to them more than these characters, which I think, you know, wouldn't necessarily work for a show like Futurama, but it works a little better for a show like South Park, where you I guess you still got people who complain that the kids aren't the focus anymore, but it feels like the show stays a little fresher by changing the perspective a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm a little cynical when it comes to South Park, I'll admit. But so I think watch some of the new stuff.
I think it's fair because South Park is a cynical show.
It's
provoking that own energy.
Yeah. There's, I think every year with South Park, I'm like, there's some stuff I liked and some stuff I didn't. But they do. They are constantly trying to change it up, which I appreciate.
Yeah. It's a very different show. It becomes a very different show.
Very much so, yeah. And they even talk about it in their episodes. I'm going to talk about this in a video soon, but like, there's an episode in season 15 where they basically outright say, like, we can't just keep doing the same shit every week. and then shortly after that is when things start to move into, like, serialized territory with the show, which was a very new thing for them. So it feels like their primary thing is, we just don't want to get bored making the show, so we're going to do what makes us happy making the show. Yeah.
It'd be interesting if more shows would take, like, big creative shifts like that.
It
would be interesting to see Futurama in these movies take a more serialized approach.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess you can't mess with success.
I can't think of that many shows in this realm, in the adult animation shows, in adult animation that have done that. I can think of South Park and then I guess Archer, when Archer started doing the themed seasons.
Yeah. I didn't keep up with it too much after that. But
we're about to go through it after these movies. So, well, I haven't watched, I think, the last three or four seasons. So I'm excited to get back into it and see how those final themed seasons turned out. Because I like their themes. I think they're good themes. Yeah. We'll see how that goes. Okay, do you guys have a favorite joke in this movie? I got a couple more that I really love.
Oh yeah, I do. I absolutely do.
All right,
it might be one of my top like three favorite Futurama jokes of all time. It's the robot devil asking Bender to give him his firstborn.
That was what I was going to say. That's what I was going to check.
Like, this has been. It's funny because I think my favorite, I remember not loving Bender's Game, but I also think my favorite Scary Door joke is in that one. So it's just like just highlights, like these big highlight moments. Like
totally.
Bender throw, like the moment where it's so sincere and they're like reconnecting and
Daddy
tosses them at it. Yeah.
It's so funny. That is one of my favorite. That I agree. That is like a top tier Futurama joke, and it's such a well executed sequence. And I like that they brought in Dan Castellaneta to play the robot devil for just that joke. It's so funny.
And then I just love the setup of Bender in the Army of the Damned, like raiding heaven.
Right.
Like, I just like that, like, as a Futurama setup in general.
Totally. Yeah, that's fun. I like Bender.
Great joke, though.
Bender leading an army is fun. Like, I like they do that a little bit in the revival season. They have a time travel episode that basically is about how, in the future, Bender's going to lead a robot uprising, and we need to change that from happening. We need to stop that from happening. So I guess it's a recurring thing with Bender, is his desire to kill all humans. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Usually out of jealousy, though.
Yeah, he's a sensitive soul.
He really is. He's so insecure. It's what we talk about that a lot in our first four episodes talking about Futurama. And this is another one that very much highlights his insecurity through both the League of Robots and through his jealousy of Fry.
Yeah, I love the "let me go with you" toward the end.
Right, right. For
like,
sure.
When he whispers it, like, that's all he wants is just to go with him.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm glad that that's something that shines through even in these stories that we don't love as much. But it's so core to his character, even from the beginning of the show, that you gotta make sure that it comes to the forefront in even in these stories.
Yeah.
Okay. I liked one more. Here's another Zoidberg line I liked, when he's talking about, when he's trying to convince Fry that you should be okay with the polyamorous relationship. And he's like, it's like sharing a cake. Don't you want to share a cake with a bunch of other guys thrusting their sweaty, naked bodies against the cake?
And then when he opens the door and they're like, hey, would you like cake?
Yeah. So good. it's so good. And then this is another small one, but this makes me laugh every single time because I forget about it every single time. And it's when they're fighting Yivo through they're having like a space battle with Yivo through the portal, and Zap Brannigan goes, "Stardate, the year of the tiger." It's so stupid.
Zap Brannigan has some of my favorite dialogue in the show.
He's perfect.
Such a presence.
He's so funny.
Yeah.
He's whenever he's in an episode, he's usually got like the standout line. He's got so many good jokes.
the velour,
and they fit him, and they fit him into three of these four Futurama movies. He's in a chunk of, I think, the first, second, and fourth. He's a big part of the fourth one. And the fourth
one, he's good for a grandiose story, I feel
yes,
like.
Yes, totally.
He's a good presence to have.
Yeah, and in the fourth one, you see him do some of the, probably some of the worst stuff he's ever done as Captain you see in Into the Wild Green Yonder.
I can't remember at all.
There's a scene where he, like, they're chasing the Planet Express ship, and they're going through the giant mini golf course, and they're going through the windmill, and Kif's like, if you keep going at the current trajectory, we're going to get cut in half. And he goes, same speed ahead. and they get cut in half, and like thousands of his men float into space and die. Like, it's just thousands of them. It's so dark.
I think my favorite Zap Brannigan quote is, she's built like a steakhouse, but she handles like a bistro.
So good. I like, if we hit the bullseye, the dominoes will fall like a house of cards. Checkmate. Oh, what a good character. A classic
he's
character.
So good. Yeah, he's oh my best. God, I have my Troy McClure figure up there. So just so sad that Phil Hartman did not play him. Yeah. That's all really I think is. About whenever he's on screen.
I would love there's audition footage somewhere. It exists. Like
of him doing it?
They basically offered him the role, and he said, oh, I'm going to, he basically said, I want to audition like anyone would. And he was like, and they're like, okay. So they brought him into audition. And that was like one of the last things they worked with him on before he died. And so, so that has to exist somewhere. I wish they would release it, because I would really like to see it. It's like how they released that, the animatic of Shrek with Chris Farley playing Shrek.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. I would love to take some Troy McClure audio and animate Zap Brannigan over.
Right, totally. Yeah,
I just want to see it, you know?
Yeah, me too. And, you know, Billy's Zap is obviously so
yeah, and
good.
He's, you know.
Yeah, it's very definitely, Phil Hartman.
And it's a very good tribute to him, too. It is. Like,
yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah.
He's done it very lovingly.
No doubt. No doubt about it. Oh, what a good character. What a good actor. Phil Hartman, one of my favorites of all time. Very, very sad that we didn't get years and years and years more of him. But, you know, such is life. What else we got to talk about here? Let's see.
There's a joke in it that one of the jokes that I didn't realize came from this, but that I always remember was oh wait, are you winking or blinking? And then she like pulls out the fucking the glasses.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about good. That one. Fair. That's really good.
I forgot that was here.
Yeah, let's see.
This is something that we talked about because we said it only happens one time, but it happens here. You remember when I think that's the season two opener where they fucking flush Nibbler down the toilet. And like we were like, well, that fucking bathroom has never been there before. They obviously just put it there. Just do that. Hermes comes out of that bathroom in this.
Oh, he does? Yeah. Oh, I missed it.
Ugh. He does. Hermes comes out of that bathroom.
Have you guys like looked for it? Like, is the door not there unless it's like
the
it's
door is usually sometimes. Like it's like a it usually connects like the conference room or something like that.
Yeah, it's there sometimes, and sometimes it feels like it goes to a very different location. Like it sometimes feels like people are walking through it like, hey, everyone, you know what I mean? It's like they weren't just in the bathroom. They were somewhere else.
Like a break room or something like that.
Yeah.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. I think, although if you play the Futurama video game, you get the full layout of the whole Planet Express building. You can check out the whole thing, but it does feel like it's a little different than the show. So
yeah, they have to make it. They can't change it every time. They do something different.
Right. Exactly.
Like the Angry Dome isn't always there.
Oh God. The
Angry
Dome. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff. And like, there's like the sub basement where they have like the lava pit.
Oh yeah. Where they bring Seymour back.
Yeah. Now I know what it's like to be Dog God.
He's like,
oh man, I what a fun building though. It's such a good iconic building shape. I love it.
Yeah,
it's a great location for the show. Love it, big fan. Do you guys have any other stuff about this movie specifically that you liked, want to talk about, problems you want to, should we talk the problematic stuff?
I can't think of too much. I feel like I'm trying to work through this movie right now.
Right. I'm still processing it.
I like Calculon and Bender. I think that's another fun reprise.
The League of Robots
becoming the Stalker.
Yes. Oh, actually, that is fun. Bender being a great Stalker is a very funny. But that is a thing that feels like that into the League of Robots feels like it could have been its own separate episode of Futurama, right?
Yeah.
It almost feels like it was a story that they talked about, and then we're like, well, let's throw it into one of the movies, you know, and then threw it into this one, and it's like, oh, it's like a subplot.
It's our last chance to do it,
right? Which at this point, they didn't know that they would get revived on Comedy Central. So I think
I wonder if that's why they reprised the Pazuzu thing,
right? I think there's a lot of
why the Tin Hat guy, who's been this big mysterious background character.
Yes, they finally reveal who he was.
They get the chance to do it now.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do?
And that's kind of something that, you know, I'm glad that they did that, but it also felt like there were some other stories that I was surprised they never followed up on. Although there's some debate in my comment sections about if these were ever intended to be more stories. But I always thought I've talked about this on here before. The one that I always want them to follow up on is when Nibbler refers to Leela as the other.
I've seen your video
bigger
on that. Yeah,
and so I got a lot of comments that were just like, it was just lying to Fry. It was not a big deal. Like, it's nothing. You know,
it's like it's like how Yoda says the same exact thing. There is another, and that it was never followed up on.
I think that was ultimately. And it ended up being Leia.
But they made it for 40 years. They didn't follow up on it.
But they also even just at the end of The Why of Fry, he basically tells Fry they'll need his help again. They're like, oh, we'll ask for your help again. We will. And I guess they're
in
Bender's
Big Score.
I kind of
felt like that was the wild Green Yonder.
Yeah, but Nibbler isn't in it.
It's just another universe ending thing, you know.
I do think it's one of the only things that could apply in what exists, you know what I mean? Is like, oh, it's a big thing of universal implications. But
isn't there a reason why I think Fry having the DNA thing plays into that as
the Delta brainwave,
which is why I always associate.
I just wish that they had tied that to the Niblonians again, like, you know what I mean, like to make it real clear. But who knows? Maybe that movie that we keep dreaming about them finishing it up with will bring that back.
I got another joke that I loved. It's when Fry's arguing with Leela about something. And he goes, oh, you didn't like Country Bear Jamboree either. And then he's writing to Bender.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, Leela's not upset. Like, she didn't like Country Bear Jamboree either.
Like, I love that joke.
Like, that's a great point to Fry.
It's so funny. Yeah, that he had to bring it up
everything
twice.
He's thinking.
So you clearly don't fucking like anything at this point. So.
I do think there's another visual gag that I love with Leela, and it's when Fry is trying to basically assimilate the rest of the crew, and she's holding the gun out at his head, and it's a laser, and then she points another one, and it's a laser, and then you just see a third laser, and it cuts back, and she's holding a third gun with her foot. Very silly, but very funny to see. There's like a lot of funny gags like that. Like, it's
a very funny movie.
Which, you know, I think that's I think you can't count that out. It's you got to appreciate it for being fun and funny. Well, maybe before we end, Billy, why don't you how do you feel about the other two Futurama movies? Do you have much more to say about those?
I don't remember loving them.
Right.
I remember really liking Bender's Big Score. And then I thought these were just OK.
Yeah.
It just kind of feels like they're just going back to their routine stuff kind of, which I feel like, I know they're straight to DVD movies and then they were syndicated like normal episodes, but I feel like they're just, I don't know. There's something more, I guess, I was expecting from like the Futurama movies, and they're fine.
And Bender's Big Score felt like it delivered more. Like it felt like,
it did exactly, in terms of like a grand story kind of thing.
Exactly.
And I mean, we barely even talked about like YeeVo.
Right,
but like it's just kind of the most forgettable element of the movie, which is
and it's a good guest star too, like David Cross rules.
David Cross,
yeah.
But it is funny because, I mean, I guess he doesn't really come in until like the last episode either. Like he's there, but he doesn't talk and you don't introduce. He's not in, sorry, Shklee's not introduced as Yivo until like the last episode. I agree. It does feel a little forgettable. There are some good jokes on like heaven or whatever. Like I like that angels were just like these birds that
was funny. And I just like, you know, Bender and the robot army of the damned going up against, you know, organic only heaven. It's just I just like that premise, I guess. Like,
yeah.
Very Futurama.
Yeah, totally.
But I don't know. I think Yivo is a very, I mean, I don't expect a big intimidating villain from Futurama, but like Yivo's kind of an underwhelming, even, you know, I mean, David Cross is very funny and like, you know, Arrested Development, but I feel like, I don't think Yivo's a very strong comedic presence here either.
Agreed. He's like more conceptually interesting than he is like funny in execution. Yeah.
And I think the one thing I thought was funny was the board meeting to figure out to follow up on the date. That was like the one kind of follow-up joke to this that I thought was clever and funny.
I also liked the little montage of them all getting ready for and going on the simultaneous dates.
That
worked pretty well for me. That boardroom scene reminds me of a great scene from a show called Man Seeking Woman. Have you all ever seen that show?
No.
Really good FX comedy starring Jay Baruchel, Eric Andre's co-star, and really, really funny. But the second episode it's kind of a show that takes dating and applies really weird, exaggerated, fun, almost sometimes supernatural situations to it to like relate in an analogy what it's like dating. And the second episode is about how the main character gets this girl's number, and they cut to this like war room scene of like him and all his friends and all of these like generals being like, what do we text her? Like, we need to figure out the perfect thing to text her. And then like stressing about it. And it's very funny, but that kind of reminds me of this a little bit.
Yeah. And just, you know, Richard Nixon's just always a funny presence on Futurama.
It really is. So
the fact that it's also Richard Nixon negotiating this is, it's just silly. It's silly.
Love President Nixon. Gotta love President Nixon.
Yeah, he's a great presence in Futurama.
Yeah, no doubt. Oh, love it. Well, I don't know. You guys got anything else to talk about? Should we wrap things up?
Yeah, I think I'm good. Yeah, this is I just thought it was fine. Like,
right.
Like Billy said, I just kind of thought it was. I thought it was fun. Like, I did, I enjoyed it, and it made me laugh a lot, but, like, it wasn't, when I hear Futurama film, I think my brain thinks of something bigger than, like, what we get, and I think that might be my problem. It's a personal problem, but I think that might be my issue.
Yeah. Yeah, it does, especially, I think, coming off of the first one, which does feel so much bigger, and feels it feels like they really raised the stakes and made it like this big, especially when you add in the time travel stuff and it goes through like Fry's history and like you have this big reveal at the end. Like there's so many fun elements that make that feel like a bigger, more important story. And then to immediately kind of the rest of them feel a little smaller scale than even the first. It's kind of like, oh, you know, oh, wait.
Yeah.
It feels like they regressed a little bit.
Yeah,
well, I guess with that, Billy, do you want to plug? You got anything to plug? You got anything coming up you want to talk about? Or
I make videos about, you know, they're a little silly. Some are more analytical. Some are more show and tell kind of about toys and TV shows and cartoons, all nostalgic to like 90s and 2000s. I'm always putting stuff out. So my most recent thing was about Flight 29 Down, which is a Discovery Kids teen drama. So you can go check that out.
You did the video about the Cybico, right?
Yeah. I did one about all those old chat toys that like communicate with each other, like that were marketed to be like cell phones but weren't cell phones.
I had a Cybico as a kid, And I had a few friends with ones, and we were like, this is the future. This is so cool. we probably used it for like a few months before we were like, yeah, there's only so much you can do with this.
I love that short period of time where like handheld computing was starting to get really powerful right before the smartphone came out and like just made everything that the standard. It's just an interesting.
Right.
You know, I think it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun for sure. And you also do, I'm a big Digimon fan. You do a lot of Digimon content.
Oh, are
content.
You?
Oh, I grew up on Digimon.
Oh, yeah, I do a lot of Digimon stuff.
I'm a big fan. I still haven't watched every series. I've probably watched the first four series plus like Adventure Try and the last movie that came out. But I think there's a few seasons of the show that I've yet to, iterations of the show I've yet to check out.
Yeah, the most recent iteration has like few great episodes and it's not the best thing, but
is that
look
the
up a best the episode list.
The Adventure reboot?
Yeah, it's a reboot and just it's very episodic.
Right.
So it's not, don't sit down and watch all of it. But right. There's some really great, great moments in it.
Okay, cool. I'm excited to check that out. So if y'all are Digimon fans, check out Billium. Yeah. or if you like old electronics and you do a lot of you cover a lot of stuff. He's a good nice
stuff. Yeah, big umbrella.
Yeah, for sure. And it's all great.
Wait, what'd you say, Tariq?
I said you're cornering all the markets.
All right, cool. Well, with that, I want to say thank you to our producer, Michael Yunez, for producing and editing the show. I want to say thank you to Carrie Feek for amazing artwork. Thank you to Jake Neutron for our earworm theme song, which apparently Billy loved and couldn't stop singing. And thank you to Tariq for co-hosting, as always.
Oh, thanks.
And thank you, Billy. Thanks, Billy, for joining us. I'm so glad you came on.
I had so much fun.
This was a lot of fun. Yeah. And you've got free invitation whenever you want to come talk about more cartoons with us. Feel free to come on.
All right. Awesome.
And
thank you so much.
Thank you to the audience for listening. And with that, thank you very much. Love you all. Goodbye.
Yeah. I'm going to put hand sanitizer on it this time. So it's clean.